content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our February 2024 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in the program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you are not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program. This month, we'll look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of January at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books, and Library Services. Let's begin the program with a book by the popular author David Baldacci. This one is called The Edge. The 620 man is back, dropped by his handlers into a small coastal town in Maine to solve the murder of a CIA agent who knew America's dirtiest secrets. Can Travis Devine uncover the truth before his time runs out? When CIA operative Jenny Silkwell is murdered in rural Maine, government officials have immediate concerns over national security. Her laptop and phone were full of state secrets that, in the wrong hands, endanger the lives of countless operatives. In need of someone who can solve the murder quickly and retrieve the missing information, the U.S. government knows just the chameleon they can call on. Ex-Army Ranger Travis Devine spent his time in the military preparing to take on any scenario, followed by his short-lived business career chasing shadows in the deepest halls of power. So his analytical mind makes him particularly well-suited for complex, high-stakes tasks. Taking down the world's largest financial conspiracy proved his value, and in comparison, this case looks straightforward, except small towns hold secrets, and Devine finds himself an outsider again. Devine must ingratiate himself with locals who have trusted each other their whole lives and who distrust outsiders just as much. Dak, Jenny's brother, who's working to revitalize the town, Earl, the retired lobsterman, who found Jenny's body, and Alex, Jenny's sister, with a dark past of her own. As Devine gets to know the residents of Putnam, Maine, answers seem to appear and then transform into more questions. There's a long history of secrets and those who will stop at nothing to keep them from being exposed, leaving Devine with no idea who he can trust and who wants him dead. That is called The Edge. It sounds like a great mystery by David Baldacci. Now, speaking of secrets, let's turn to another book that is entitled, very simply, The Secret by Lee Child and Andrew Child. Now, this is a review that was written in October of 2023 by Ray Palin. There is nothing quite like a Jack Reacher novel. Lee Child has been penning thrillers featuring his favorite protagonist for decades. Now he has released his fourth Reacher story written with his brother, Andrew Child. In many of these books, Reacher is a large figure with an eagle's sense of justice who roams the country and gets into situations that require a hero. There are others, like The Secret, in which Reacher is called upon by his own government to help clean up a potentially deadly mess. This latest effort is set in 1992, which makes some of the post-Cold War rumblings more significant than they would be in the present day. Keith Bridgerman, who is in his early 60s, wakes up in his hospital bed where he is recovering from a cardiac arrest to find two strange women standing there. They identify themselves as Veronica and Roberta Sanson, and they are interested in a top-secret bioweapons project in India that he was a part of in 1969. Before they end his life by throwing him out of his hospital window, they inform him that they are the daughters of Morgan Sanson. This allows Bridgman to go over in his head who he wronged during that mission as his body races toward the pavement. It turns out that Bridgman is just the start. Two other apparently innocent U.S. citizens, Owen Buck and Varinder Singh, die mysteriously. The response is swift from Secretary of Defense Charles Stammerin, who puts together a team to look into these deaths and try to find a connection. Among these folks is the one and only Jack Reacher. If Stammerin had done a better job vetting these candidates, he might have had second thoughts about Reacher, who will hunt down the truth like a bulldog no matter where it leads. Readers are already privy to the fact that Stammerin had something to do with the tragic events that took place in India when thousands of innocent lives were claimed due to the mishandling of chemical weapons. The seven members of that team are now on a hit list kept by Veronica and Roberta, who also insist on learning the name of the notorious eighth individual who was really pulling the strings. Meanwhile, more murders are being committed at the hands of these ruthless assassins, who sort of remind me of Bambi and Thumper from the James Bond classic Diamonds Are Forever. When talk of Russian involvement in the 1969 case becomes a thing, Reacher and company get their hands on a former Soviet who provides some much-needed information concerning the identity of that eighth member. The secret is just what you would expect from a Jack Reacher novel. Fast-paced, no-nonsense, and extremely hard-hitting. While fans wait patiently for the second season of Reacher to hit Amazon Prime Video, it might be a nice idea to dive into this exciting new book so you can get your Reacher fix right now. Once again, that's a review by Ray Palin written in October of 2023. The book is called The Secret by Lee Child and his brother Andrew Child. Now let's take a look at another popular author. This is a new book called Resurrection Walk, and it's by Michael Connelly. Here's the plot for this one. Lincoln lawyer Mickey Haller enlists the help of his half-brother Harry Bosch to prove the innocence of a woman convicted of killing her ex-husband. Defense attorney Mickey Haller is back, taking the long-shot cases where the chances of winning are one in a million. After getting a wrongfully convicted man out of prison, he is inundated with pleas from incarcerated people claiming innocence. He enlists his half-brother, retired LAPD Detective Harry Bosch, to weed through the letters, knowing most claims will be false. Bosch puts a needle from the haystack. A woman in prison for killing her ex-husband, a sheriff's deputy, but who still maintains her innocence. Bosch reviews the case and sees elements that don't add up, and a sheriff's department intent on bringing quick justice in the killing of one of its own. Now Haller has an uphill battle in court, a David fighting Goliaths to vindicate his client. The path for both lawyer and investigator is fraught with danger from those who don't want the case reopened and will stop at nothing to keep the Haller-Bosch Dream Team from finding the truth. Once again, the book is called Resurrection Walk, and it's by Michael Connolly. Now let's turn to a book by Janet Ivanovich. This one is called Dirty 30. Here's the plot. Stephanie Plum, Trenton's hardest-working, most underappreciated bounty hunter, is offered a freelance assignment that seems simple enough. Local jeweler Martin Rabner wants her to locate his former security guard, Andy Manley, a.k.a. Nutsy, who is convinced stole a fortune in diamonds out of his safe. Stephanie is also looking for another troubled man, Duncan Dugan, a fugitive from justice, arrested for robbing the same jewelry store on the same day. With her boyfriend Morelli away in Miami on police business, Stephanie is taking care of Bob, Morelli's giant orange dog who will devour anything from Stephanie's stray donuts to the upholstery in her car. Morelli's absence also means the inscrutable, irresistible security expert Ranger is front and center in Stephanie's life when things inevitably go sideways. And he seems determined to stay there. To complicate matters, her best friend Lula is convinced she is being stalked by a mythological demon hell-bent on relieving her of her wardrobe. An overnight stakeout with Stephanie's mother and grandma Mazur reveals three generations of women with nerves of steel and driving skills worthy of NASCAR champions. As the body count rises and witnesses start to disappear, it won't be easy for Stephanie to keep herself clean when everyone else is playing dirty. It's a good thing Stephanie isn't afraid of getting a little dirty, too. And that may be why this one's called Dirty 30, and it's by Janet Ivanovich. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, an exclusive presentation of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. Now let's turn to a book by the popular author John Grisham. This one is entitled The Exchange. It is his latest book. Here's the plot. In 1991, a young Mississippi attorney named John Grisham made a splash with the firm. He previously had written A Time to Kill, which had been rejected by many publishers before Wynwood Press gave it a 5,000-copy printing. The firm sold well over 1 million copies initially, and in 1993 was made into a film starring Tom Cruise and Gene Hackman. Mitch McDear, a graduate of Harvard Law School, spurns the opportunity to work for any of the prestigious law firms recruiting Harvard lawyers. Instead, he accepts a position with a small tax law firm in Memphis, Tennessee. However, Mitch soon discovers that his job entails laundering and hiding money for the mob. He decides to assist the FBI in bringing down Bendini, Lambert, and Locke and its criminal enterprise. The mob respond to his efforts, as one might expect from them. They try to kill him. The Exchange is the long-awaited sequel to that first book, The Firm. After several years of hiding away from the tumult created by the demise of Bendini, Lambert, and Locke, and the arrests and convictions of many of its members, Mitch and his wife Abby spent time in Europe. But Mitch grew tired of a life without purpose and joined Scully and Pershing, the largest law firm in the world, with major offices in London and New York. It is now 2005, and Mitch is safely ensconced as a partner, while Abby is a cookbook editor. They reside with their twin boys on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Mitch still thinks about his days in Memphis. Early on in The Exchange, while on a trip to Tennessee to work pro bono for a potential death row client, he contacts one of his former associates from Bendini, Lambert, and Locke. The visit does not go well. Clearly, the scars from Mitch's turning on his fellow attorneys have not yet healed. Back in New York, Mitch agrees to help his firm on a case involving one of their Italian partners as they seek payment for a $500 million construction project undertaken for the Libyan government. Given Libya's tumultuous history and its leader, there is legitimate concern that the lawyers might face danger. These fears are well-founded as Libyan terrorists kidnap a member of the legal team, inflicting death and brutality on security staff and Libyan soldiers. Mitch leads a negotiation team for the hostages' safe return. At this point in the story, Grisham seems to lose the magic that is usually present in his novels. The negotiations are simply that, conferences in law offices and first-class hotels. Air travel on private jets or in business class and a few high-end meals certainly do not add suspense to the proceedings. While fictional attorneys in these situations often end up performing dangerous exploits and sometimes behave as James Bond types with a license to practice law, that is not the case here. The final 200 pages move at a less than thrilling pace. Given Grisham's record for producing thoughtful and compelling legal-themed novels, I'm willing to grant him a mulligan for the exchange. It does move along with some intrigue and holds your attention, but the finale's lack of excitement left me wanting more. Still, there's no doubt in my mind that 2024 will find me reading another outstanding book by John Grisham. And this was a review by Stuart Schiffman on October 19th of 2023. It's called The Exchange by John Grisham, and I'll put in a personal footnote that I actually did listen to this book, and I thought it was riveting and a great story. So the reviewer thought a little bit less of it, but I think you still might enjoy it. Many millions of people have so far. The Exchange by John Grisham. Now, let's turn to a book called Judgment Prey by John Sanford. Lucas Davenport and Virgil Flowers team up to crack an unsolvable case in this thrilling new novel by number one New York Times bestselling author John Sanford. Alex Sand was spending the evening at home playing basketball with his two young sons when all three were shot in cold blood. A wealthy federal judge, there's no short list of people who could have a vendetta against Sands, but the gruesome murders, especially that of his children, turned their St. Paul community on its head. Sand was on the verge of a major donation to a local housing charity, Heart Twin Cities, and with the money in limbo, eyes suddenly turned to his grieving widow, Margaret Cooper, to see what she might do with the money. Margaret, distraught over the death of her family, struggles to move forward and can't imagine how or why anyone would target her husband. With public pressure mounting and both the local police force and FBI hitting dead end after dead end, Lucas Davenport and Virgil Flowers are called in to do what others could not, find answers. With each potential lead flawed, Davenport and Flowers are determined to chase every theory until they figure out who killed the Sands. But when they find themselves being stonewalled by the most unlikely of forces, the two wonder if perhaps each misdirection could lead them closer to the truth. Again, that's a book called Judgment Prey by John Sanford. Now on Heard Any Good Books Lately, let's take a look at a book called The Things We Do for Love. It's by Kristen Hannah. In this tear-jerking novel by Hannah, who wrote Between Sisters, 38-year-old Angela Malone abandons a successful advertising career in Seattle to find comfort in West End, the small Pacific Northwest coastal town where she grew up. Pregnancy woes, chronic miscarriages, a baby who lived only for 5 days, and a botched adoption, have caused her marriage to journalist Conlon to end in divorce. Her big, warm-hearted Italian family welcomes her with open arms, and she throws herself into revamping the family restaurant, DeSaria's. Then she befriends hard-working teenager Lauren Ribideau, who's in need of a new coat, some mothering, and later on a place to live. Lauren's life is far worse than self-pitying Angie's. She's pregnant, her alcoholic mother has given up on her, and her rich boyfriend David is off to his first-choice college. Lauren can't go through with the abortion David encourages her to have, and the next step seems obvious. She should give the baby up to Angie, who's on the way to reconciling with Conlon. Hannah stacks the odds against Lauren almost absurdly and makes her life with Angie a rose-tinted dream come true. But she paints a wrenching, convincing picture of the dilemma teenage mothers face. Familiar but warmly rendered characters, a few surprising twists, and a bittersweet ending make this satisfying summer reading. Again, the book is called The Things We Do for Love, that is, and it is by the author Kristen Hanna. Now let's turn to another book called Obsession, and this one is by Stuart Woods, whom we've read many books about, many summaries about Stuart Woods, very popular author. Teddy Fay must put all his skills to the test in this electrifying new adventure in the New York Times best-selling series. While filming on location in scenic Santa Barbara, California, Peter Barrington and Ben Pachetta look to expand Centurion Studios' business by making a deal with a young Croatian tech billionaire. But when the magnate's wife is kidnapped, Teddy Fay is brought in to assess the threat and recover the young woman. As Teddy unravels the threads of her disappearance, he quickly comes to find an old vendetta seethes at the center, one that puts them all at risk. And danger is lurking even nearer to home as an obsessive fan with perilous intentions weasels his way onto the film set. It's only Teddy who can stop him from getting too close for comfort. Once again, the book is called Obsession, and it's by Stuart Woods. Now let's continue with a book called Betrayal, and this one was written by Philip Margolin. In Philip Margolin's Betrayal, attorney Robin Lockwood finds herself defending her old nemesis in a multiple murder case with too many suspects where success might cost her own life. Robin Lockwood is now a prominent defense attorney in Portland, Oregon. But a decade ago, she was a ranked and rising MMA fighter. Her career came to a quick end when she was knocked out and concussed in the first round by Mandy Carrigan, a much more talented fighter. Now the situation couldn't be more different. With Carrigan on her last legs, her career nearly over, arrested for the quadruple murder of the entire Finch family, and Carrigan's only possible friend is the attorney she beat so many years ago. For Robin, it's no simple Margaret Finch was a lawyer working for vicious Russian mobsters and was in the crosshairs of both the mobsters and the widower of a woman of a client killed. Her husband, Nathan Finch, was deeply in debt to a bookie who threatened his life. Her son, Ryan, was the one who sold Carrigan illegal performance-enhancing drugs and was beaten severely by her when Carrigan failed her drug test. To complicate matters further, the DA that Robin is facing is the man she's just started dating, the first person she's begun seeing seriously after her husband was killed. In a case where the stakes are high and the truth is elusive, where each new fact twists the case in a new direction, there is seemingly no way to win or direction to turn that will leave Robin Lockwood unscathed. Once again, it's called Betrayal by Philip Margolin. And now a very popular author. Here's one called 12 Months to Live by James Patterson. We have a summary of a book by James Patterson almost every month on this program. Here's the plot. Long Island attorney, locked in the most crucial trial of her career, learns that she has, well, you know, all things considered, things have been going pretty well for Jane Smith. Sure, she's twice divorced. She's not all that close to her sister, Bridget, who also has cancer. And Rob Jacobson, the client accused of killing Mitch and Kathy Gates and their teenage daughter, Laurel, is a lying piece of trash. But Jane and her investigator, tavern owner Jimmy Cunneth, have just been asked to look again into the high-profile Carson case involving another family of three who were shot dead some years ago. Although she's far from certain that Jacobson is innocent, Jane's never yet lost a case, and she doesn't intend to lose this one. She responds to the mountain of forensic evidence presented by Suffolk County D.A. Kevin Ahern, who's also never lost a case, by crowing that there's no motive until suddenly she's confronted with a compelling motive and a whole new collection of lies that bring her up against crooked ex-cop Joe Champy, who may not have killed himself after all, and get Jimmy shot twice and beaten once, as if there was nothing else for him to be doing. Patterson seems entirely absent from this collaboration, which reads a lot more like Lupica and not Top Drawer Lupica. The overstuffed plot never seems any more believable than Jane's damn the torpedoes response to her worsening symptoms. But it's hard not to sympathize with an overstressed attorney who insists on performing herself daily because crazy is kind of my thing. As fast-moving and forgettable as that fly you keep swatting in vain, that is called 12 Months to Live by James Patterson. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed the program. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services, simply Google or search for Accessible Books, North Carolina Library, or you can call toll-free 888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers and website to join the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.